one of these nights, and about 12 o'clock, this old world's gonna reel and rock. Saints, they all tremble and cry for pain, for the Lord's gonna come in his heaven airplane.
Dear Lord, baby Jesus, or as our brothers to the south call you, Jesus, we thank you so much for this bountiful harvest of Domino's, KFC, and the always delicious Taco Bell. You say grace, you can say it to grown-up Jesus, or teenage Jesus, or bearded Jesus, or whoever you want.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound, a dimension of sight, a dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into...
You can't just do whatever. The words stumbled out of you like a drunk leaving a bar looking for a fresh new last call. You are not a man of words, but did your best to offer advice you offered me. You can't just do whatever. And I know what you meant. You meant that whatever I choose to do, I must not be aimless. I must not simply spin this globe and go wherever I stick my finger, because 71% of the time I will end up in the ocean. And if I do end up in the ocean, I can't just do whatever. I better learn to swim. You can't just do whatever. The conversation came after you asked me about heaven. Told me that you thought heaven would be specific to each person, and that each person would have their own version of it, then asked me what mine would be. And I was so scared to tell you. I don't have one. But you nodded your head, as if confirming a suspicion that perhaps school had robbed me of a belief in some stories. You said, you don't have to believe what I believe, it's enough to be good. Be good. I will. I will think about your heaven. Your heaven would be the same haircut forever. It would be a stick, a dog, and some distance, a lawn that always needs mowing, a six-pack of Pilsner short bottles, and your real teeth back, because your dentures could never master that bottle-opening trick that you love to do. The first time you tried it with dentures, I had nightmares for a month because I thought your mouth had fallen off. Your heaven would be Austria before the war, in Canada after you met Grandma. It would be head cheese sandwiches and blood sausage, other deli meats that would ensure you would never ever have to entertain dinner guests, and I would never be in danger of having my lunch stolen. Your heaven would be a stash of raisins and problems that you could fix with your hands. I remember you tried to fix everything with your hands. I remember the difficult days. I remember the bandages. They looked like tiny blankets, as if your knuckles had all gone off to bed. Walls that looked like they'd said something that got under your skin and were suddenly made to pay for it. I know you were an angry man. Fingertips like spent shotgun shells, bleeding smoke cocktails of gunpowder and singed plastic. You had what some people would call a temper. But you loved a good joke, even if it was on you. Something that would crack open the walls of your chest and let the wind tickle your heart, just enough to let you know it was still there. You didn't always laugh. You didn't always smile. You did keep a mental ledger of what you called your send flowers list. I remember thinking it was a thank you to those who got you good. But learned the truth after my grandmother added a thin layer of sand to your sandwiches because you refused to make your own lunch for work. You told me about it when you picked me up from school that day. You said, Grandma just made the send flowers list. And I asked, Because you love her so much. And you said, because I'm gonna kill her. Of course you didn't. Your version of kill meant 2 months before winter, having a seamstress take in each of her coats a few inches so on the first day she needed one, she fumbled with the sudden tightness, and you stood there smiling and said, honey, I love you no matter how big you get. She did not laugh, and managed to staple your smile back into a straight face when she told all of your friends at work that she had to move into the spare room because you couldn't stop farting at night. You often asked me, if I had a heaven, what would it be like? And I told you that for such a small word, if, is just too big to wrap my belief around. I would not bend to the hypothetical, but wish now that I would have, even if it was just to ease your mind in the belief that I could be headed to that other place you believed in. I would tell you now how my heaven is here. It was here, in the gentle warfare of your relationship with Grandma, where volleys were traded back and forth like hockey cards between children who didn't care what the stats meant. My heaven would have been someone in grade 5 finally willing to trade me their fruit roll-up for my tin of sardines. My hell was wondering why. Why would you give me sardines for lunch? My heaven would make you laugh. Because I get the feeling you didn't get to do that very much. Through my hell, through the night terrors and bloody noses, through the eyes black, bruised back, sneak attack, knapsack, and winter coat hijacks, you did your best to seal up the cracks in my armor and made my heaven here. I would have loved to have made you laugh more. To make your send flowers list just once. So I offer you now my if. If there is a heaven, mine would have a post office, and I could send letters to yours. The first letter would read, hell's not so bad. They pretty much let you do whatever.
Great. Those rules are so, but you know, that is true. That is true. I mean, I think the real blasphemy is everybody goes to heaven. I think that the blasphemy is that what ends up happening is that if you want to just,
everyone ends up going to heaven.
If you want to play the thought experiment
of
heaven and hell, and it's a very fun thought experiment to play, especially for one, the idea of heaven and hell is fantastic because people like to pretend that heaven and hell is something that happens after you die. So the concept is this place that we're in right now is neither heaven or hell, but it's like heaven or hell.
Testing grounds.
It's a testing ground.
Yeah.
It's and heaven or hell is this kind of like either like the best surprise party or the worst surprise party of all time that happens when you die. When the really trippy thing to consider is this is actually heaven and hell that we're in right now.
Like, what do you mean?
Well, this is it. We're in what could be called the afterlife already. Like, we are already in something that you could consider the afterlife of nothingness. So if prior to this we are complete nothingness, or we are just some literally a no thing, to even say we were a no thing is to negate the no thing. So if prior to this there was a non-state of beingness, and then that non-state of beingness came into its own
state
of beingness, then you would say that's death for nothingness. So we're the afterlife of nothingness, which means that this life that you're existing in
is an afterlife,
is heaven or hell. It's just depending on what.
And then there won't be an afterlife after this?
Well, I mean, no one knows the answer to that. But I mean, why focus on that at all when you're dealing with the fact that you're already in the predicament?
Right.
These people are, a lot of these hell heaven addicts are yapping about this predicament they're going to be in completely overlooking the fact that they're already in the predicament, which is that they became something.
Yeah.
Well, this is it completely flies in the face of a lot of the things our Lord Jesus Christ said, which is, I am the God of the living, not the God of the dead. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. The kingdom of heaven is here.
Oh, really?
Never, you know, so it's like all these things are like, this is it right now. And you're putting off dealing with the personal responsibility that you have for acknowledging the fact that you're either in heaven or in hell right now. That's it. This is it. And what a perfect heaven or hell it is. I mean, it's the ultimate. If you were going to manufacture a heaven or a hell, this would be it.
I had a rabbi who told me that the afterlife is the same, heaven or hell. It's just an open Talmud, and you get to read it. And if you do the work on this level, you'll really enjoy it. And if you don't, you'll be like, this is so boring.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just think it's there's just no, I mean, it's like whatever's, the thing is this, whatever's going on here right now in your life, whatever the pattern is, it's going to keep going on. Whether you're in a goddamn, if someone throws you into.
Oh, like if you're a drama queen, you're going to be a drama queen in heaven?
Yeah, it's not going to change.
Yeah, you're right. That's your soul. That's your personality. It'll
the
be up
scene
there.
Changes. That's it.
Even if you'll be a ball of light, you'll still be a drama queen ball of light.
Exactly. If you're a procrastinator, you're still going to procrastinate.
How you doing? Doom today?
Exactly.
My light's barely burning.
That's it. Nothing's going to change. You might experience.
Can you believe it?
You might have like a few millennia of being like, it is so amazing here in heaven.
Yeah.
But inevitably, you're going to go right back to the same shit. You're going to talk shit about somebody in heaven, guaranteed. You're going to talk about someone behind
heaven. Suddenly you wouldn't, your ability to like speak ill of someone, that wouldn't go away.
You'd still
would stay.
You'd still probably talk shit about things that happen to you on Earth. Like you'd see people. If you're a dish talker, or if you're
I did it better than that.
Exactly. You're like, why is that guy in heaven?
You'd want to be more like leave out the people who shouldn't be there. It's like when you get into a nightclub, like, why is that guy getting in the rope?
What the
just got in, but why is that guy now?
They're really lowering the standards for this place.
I did see that once at a nightclub. I was there with Rogan, and we got in, whatever, and some girls came and sat with us. And then some other girl came in, and these girls like, excuse me, this is art. And I was like, you just got in here because you were like nearby and looked hot. What do you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like yours now?
That doesn't go away. That doesn't go away. So that's the hilarious thing about it is that we're all in the afterlife, but nobody wants to acknowledge it. We want to pretend that somehow this isn't the afterlife. It totally is.
any one of us could at this moment be as one about to die. Genuinely and honestly, we would understand the mystery of life. Because death is the source of life. Just as we see in nature, when the leaves fall from the trees, they mold and rot, and this supplies humus from which more plants can grow. It's a cycle life. But in every way, symbolic and otherwise, human beings try to stop that cycle. It is not, therefore, natural for us to wish to prolong life indefinitely. But we live in a culture where it has been rubbed into us in every conceivable way that to die is a terrible thing. And that is a tremendous disease from which our culture in particular suffers. And we notice it firstly in the way in which death is swept under the carpet. When one gets to an extreme, that is to say, to the point where you realize that there is nothing you can do about life, nothing you could not do about life, then you're the mosquito biting the iron bull. Well, so in the same way, he said, look, you heard a bomb coming at you, you could hear it whistle, and you knew it was right above you and headed straight at you, and that you were finished, and you accepted it. And suddenly there was a strange feeling that everything is absolutely clear. You suddenly see that there isn't a grain of dust in the whole universe that's in the wrong place. That you understand completely, absolutely, totally, what it's all about. Because you can't say what it is. So, you see, this is always the opportunity presented by death. That if one can go into death with eyes open, and have somebody help you, if necessary, to give up before you die, this extraordinary thing can happen to you. So that from your standpoint, in that position at that time, you would say, I wouldn't have missed that opportunity for the world. Now I understand why we die. The reason we die is to give us the opportunity to understand what life's all about. By letting go. Because then we come to a situation that the ego can't deal with. When we are no longer hypnotized by that, then our natural consciousness can see clearly what all this universe is for. So, therefore, we have missed this golden opportunity by institutionalizing death out of the way. Instead of having a socially understood acceptance of death and rejoicing in death. To be important, existence does not have to go on any longer than a moment. Quantitative continuity is of no value. Who said you're supposed to survive? Who gave you the idea that it's a gas to go on and on and on? And we can say that it's a good thing for everything to go on living from the very simple demonstration that if we enable everybody to go on living, we overcrowd ourselves. That we're like an unpruned tree. We can also look further into it and see that if our death could be indefinitely postponed, we would not actually go on postponing it indefinitely. Because after a certain point, we would realize that that isn't the way in which we wanted to survive. Why else would we have children? Because children arrange for us to survive in another way. By, as it were, passing on a torch so that you don't have to carry it all the time. There comes a point where you can give it up and say, now you work. It's a far more amusing arrangement for nature to continue the process of life through different individuals than it is always with the same individual. Because as each new individual approaches life, life is renewed. And one remembers how fascinating the most ordinary everyday things are to a child. Because they see them all as marvelous, because they see them all in a way that is not related to survival and profit. And when we get to thinking of everything in terms of survival and profit value, as we do, then the shapes of scratches on the floor cease to have magic. And most things, in fact, cease to have magic. So therefore, in the course of nature, once we have ceased to see magic in the world anymore, we are no longer fulfilling nature's game of being aware of itself. There's no point in it anymore. And so we die. And so something else comes to birth, which gets an entirely new view. And so nature's self-awareness is a game worth the candle.
The one that makes me scream, she said. The one that makes me laugh, she said. And threw her arms around my neck. Show me how you do it, and I promise you, I promise that I'll run away with you. I'll run away with you.
Jews believe about heaven?
What?
Everybody goes, except the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
Everybody goes to heaven, and before you get to heaven, you gotta have cleansing. It's 11 months of cleansing.
Uh-huh.
Depending how bad you are, it's how hard they gotta turn the fire up.
Okay.
But for those 11 months, every day is like 1,000 years.
Wow.
Yeah, heaven days are a lot longer than...
This fits into a little bit with the Tibetan idea, the Tibetan Buddhist idea, which is it's like a series of... When you die, there's a series of terrifying things that you witness. And at any given point, all you have to do is recognize that you're just seeing a projection of yourself.
Yeah.
And that there is no other. You're just a oneness. And then you don't get... reborn, because a lot of people
you don't get reborn.
That's the idea, is you don't want to come back into this thing.
Like, I thought Buddhism has reincarnation.
Oh, they do, but that's bad. You don't want to go. It's called samsara, so it's this endless cycle. It's this endless.
You fucked up. Now you're a caterpillar in the next life,
right? Or whatever it may be. So the concept is you see a glowing light, and it's really scary, because when you die, most people are not prepared for death,
right?
So they're scared. Most people die terrified, or they die confused, or they die drugged up, or they die freaked out, or whatever. So you go, the momentum of your death propels you in the exact same direction your whole life has been going. And like I was saying, you react to death in the same way that you've been. One of the things they say in hospice is you die as you lived. A person will die, will repeat the same patterns that they had in their life in the last few months of their existence. They'll do the exact same shit over again. So you die as you live. The computer program just keeps running the same thing no matter what's happening. So when you die, this kind of karmic DNA continues its work, and so generally what that means is you're going to see a bunch of shit, you freak out about it, you see this white light, you run from it, you're like, the white light they all talk about going into, you're like, you don't want anything to do with it, so you run from it. And so then the next thing you apparently see, all these sights, so you see apparently like a Buddha sitting in a field, an impassive Buddha sitting in a field who won't acknowledge you. Like, it's just someone meditating, and you're like, where the fuck am I? And they won't, just like, doesn't see you. And so then you run from that, walk away from it, whatever. You're in fear is the point. And then you get, this is where it seems to be similar to the idea in Judaism, which is that you just get ripped apart by demons for like a long time after that. The demons come and they devour you, get ripped to shreds. You see the hell realms, the hell of hungry ghosts, as it's called, where all the beings have these super long necks.
How do they come to this?
What do you mean?
I mean, if it's something that no one's ever been to,
yeah.
How does all the religions have an afterlife version?
I happen to believe in life after death, but I don't think it's got a thing to do with reward and punishment. Religion is always in the control business, and that's something people don't really understand. It's in the guilt-producing control business. And if you have heaven as a place where you're rewarded for your goodness and hell as a place where you're punished for your evil, then you sort of have control of the population. And so they create this fiery place, which has quite literally scared the hell out of a lot of people throughout Christian history.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of a control tactic.
But wait a minute, you're saying that hell, the idea of a place under the earth or somewhere where you're tormented for an eternity, is actually an invention the church?
I think the church fired its furnaces hotter than anybody else. But I think there's a sense in most religious life of reward and punishment in some form. The church doesn't like for people to grow up, because you can't control grown-ups. That's why we talk about being born again. When you're born again, you're still a child. The people don't need to be born again. They need to grow up. They need to accept their responsibility for themselves and the world.
What do you make of the theology, which is pretty quite prominent these days in America, which is that there is one guaranteed way not to go to hell, and that is to accept Jesus as your personal Savior?
Yeah, I grew up in that tradition. Every church I know claims that we are the true church, and they have some ultimate authority. We have the infallible Pope. We have the inerrant Bible. The idea that the truth of God can be bound in any human system, by any human creed, by any human book, is almost beyond imagination for me. I mean, God is not a Christian. God is not a Jew or a Muslim or a Hindu or a Buddhist. All of those are human systems which human beings have created to try to help us walk into the mystery of God. I honor my tradition. I walk through my tradition. But I don't believe my tradition defines God. I think it only points me to God.
You and I are emerging people, not fallen people. Our problem is not that we are born in sin. Our problem is we do not yet know how to achieve being fully human. The function of the Christ is not to rescue the sinners, but to empower you and to call you to be more deeply and fully human than you've ever realized there was the potential within you to be. Maybe salvation needs to be conveyed in terms of enhancing your humanity rather than rescuing you from it.
Life is a startling and wondrous experience. And eventually, I think we're going to discover that God is unfolding through the life of our consciousness and our self-consciousness and is not a parent figure up in the sky. But I believe because I'm related to something that is not bound by time and space, that I will share in whatever God's eternity is.
Said, I don't believe in hell, but we could sell it. Tell them we're the anointed agents of salvation. Sinners. The only way to be forgiven is if you're living within a system of precepts and suppositions that we prescribe. Tell them a book that was assembled by the Nicene Council from a hodgepodge of religious texts was literally written by God. Think for yourself and burn in hell. Inferno blazes, ignites hair, singes bone, melts faces into the faceless. We alone determine what faith is. Heaven may or may not exist, but they need to believe. We own the keys to eternal peace. Christ said, the only way to the Father is through me, and the only way to Christ is through us. Plus, tell them there's a demon powerful enough to the Father, Almighty Creator, and we're the ordained soul negotiators, and they will pay us to save them from hell, which I don't believe in, but we can sell it. I mean, they're already scared. They're already living amongst violence, disease, decadence, and fear. They're already living amongst rank smells, garbage, ghetto slums. This is hell on earth, and the key to our influence and convince them that the afterlife can be even worse. I mean, it's the oldest game in the world, so we might as well keep playing. Just like the Egyptian god, amen, and God, nothing to do with Christianity, but it works, so we keep saying it. Just like the Old Testament has about as much to do with the New as it has to do with the Quran. As it has to do with hellish wars like the Crusades and the conflict in Vietnam. Tell them God commanded tyrants to destroy entire societies and leave no man, woman, or child behind. Don't allow them to know that God is love. Tell them God is vindictive and jealous. Tell them God ain't for the peaceful and the tolerant. God is for the superficial, self-righteous zealots, in which the simple and judgmental are relished. Well, I do not believe in hell, gentlemen. But I promise you, we can sell it.
I just love smoking, folks. I'm sorry. I went 9 months without them, and man, what can I tell you? The hook is deep, man. I'm telling you, they just dropped the bait back in the water. Boom, plop. They weighed me, you know, hung me up. Caught a big one. But I have this theory, actually it's a hope, that if that scenario is at all true, when you die and you go to heaven and St. Peter meets you at the gate, if that's at all true, I believe the first thing he's going to ask you is, you got a light? You mean you all smoke here? Yeah, that's why it's heaven. These aren't clouds, this is cigarette smoke, buddy. Hell is non-smoking. You wanna look down at them for a minute? All right. I can't believe what they do to their body. It smells like an ashtray. I'm trying to eat my food. Why would they want to do that to themselves? Do they know how stupid that is? They know, God, how hellish. Light up and come on in. Hendrix is on harp tonight.
He said, baby, what's the big deal? Feel what you want to feel. Say what you wanna say. You're gonna die one day. For example, I could kiss you just because I want to. What's the difference if you turn away? I'm gonna die one day. Why do you waste your time thinking about your reputation, trying to meet an expectation, wondering what they're gonna say? You ever know, set it for a headstone. I don't wanna give the end away, but we're gonna die one day. Your body is an animal, doesn't ask for much. A little music and a soft touch, why don't you let it out to play? Your heart is in a birdcage, singing in your chest. You wanna shut it up or give it a rest? You're gonna die one day. Why do we waste our time thinking about an obligation, running from a confrontation, wondering what we ought to say? When everyone we ever know sit for a headstone, I don't wanna give the end away. We're gonna die one day. Baby, what's the big deal? If you wanna be free, say what you wanna feel. Spend the night with me. I'm gonna take you up in my arms. And if we must go down, we'll go singing to the smoke alarms. We'll dance into the ground.
Oh, sounds like suicide.
Well, I mean, there's a. If you want to look at the mythology of the thing,
I mean, I guess you could. Some people could talk to God.
Well, I mean, from the most skeptical explanation would be you make it up. You know, you're a smart person. You want to tell somebody a metaphor to help them understand what life is through the some like intellectual approximation of death.
Yeah,
you make this shit up. Like, and if so, yeah.
But what do they say though?
Well, I mean, the idea would be that if you allow into your understanding of human beings that a human can become fully actualized, and then if you allow into your understanding of human beings the concept that consciousness is not related to neurological activity, so it's not embodied.
Yeah.
Then you could theoretically, that would mean that someone who was truly enlightened or who had really woken up would have access to the sort of disembodied reservoir of all information that exists in the micro thing that they call the soul. Which means you could look at it and be like, here's what happens. So that would be
Wait, what?
So what I'm saying is, like, if you believe in the soul, yeah, right? So if you believe in the concept of the soul, and in Buddhism, it's interesting because some forms of Buddhism, there is no soul. It's a bunch of bullshit. Okay. There's no fucking soul. There's no afterlife. There is no this life, in fact. There ain't nothing. You are an imaginary sort of delusion that the universe is temporarily having. You're just this like sort of echo of behavior mechanisms that is rapidly being dissipated into time. You're nothing. Find yourself in your body. Where are you? There's no you. You have no innate self. Any self that you think you have is constantly changing. Yeah. Look at you as a baby versus where you are now. Okay. There's no static. There's no place for you to throw anchor here. Forget it. You're in a constant state of flux, and therefore there is no self. So that's like Zen Buddhism. But then in Tibetan Buddhism, there is the acknowledgement of that, ultimately a kind of like boundarylessness is what human beings are. And yet, because they're in this dimension that we happen to be in, we see that there are these things called humans that incarnate and think that they are a self and have these fundamental delusions. They also think that there's a whole pantheon of disembodied entities that also are having a similar delusion, only they don't have human bodies. So this is where you come up with all these various realms, or the bardos is what they call it.
Everybody is wondering what and where they all came from. Everybody is worrying about where they're gonna go when the whole thing's done. But no one knows for certain, and so it's all the same to me. Think out, just let the mystery be. Some say once you're gone, you're gone forever. And some say you're gonna come back. Some say you rest in the arms of the Savior who's been sent the way you lack. Some say that they're coming back in a garden, bunch of carrots and little sweet peas. Think out, just let the mystery be. Everybody is wondering what and where they all came from. Everybody is worrying about where they're gonna go when the whole thing's done. But no one knows for certain, so it's all the same to me. Out, just let the mystery be. Everybody is wondering what and where they all came from. Everybody is worrying about where they're gonna go when the whole thing's done. No one knows for certain, so it's all the same to me. Think out, just let the mystery be. Think out, just the mystery be.
When, if you're lucky, and I say this to all the youth who listen to this show, if you're lucky to meet an old wise man, that take that as a blessing. There's a famous quote in the book called the Bhagavad Gita. But Krishna says, they ask him, what's the fastest way to get to heaven? He says, it's not through charity, it's not through meditation, it's not through righteous acts. The fastest way to heaven is to spend time with wise men.
Angel of the Holy Grail saw Galahad come riding, so he took the Holy Grail off the shelf. And inside the holy chapel made for Holy Grail hiding, the angel could be seen to smile to himself. If you're the great Sir Galahad from now on, said the angel, may all angels call me blessed of my race. If you're not the great Sir Galahad, I warn you, keep on riding. And if you are, I pray you'll let me see your face.
Galahad removed his helmet, said, "Good angel, look upon me. Fear not, for I bring tidings of great joy. Long years the grail, you've got it, now you get to let me drink it. How happy must be angels thus employed. For the favors that you shower upon me, a simple angel," said the angel, "your benevolence abounds. Take your boots off, great Sir Galahad, for by your astounding beauty, whatever ground you stand on turns to holy ground." Galahad took off his boots, and he watched the ground quite closely, and the angel smiled to himself again. He said, "I can't believe I'm asking, but Sir Galahad, please tell me, what is it that makes you want to go to heaven?" "In heaven there's no lamb chops, Queen Guinevere's for hand jobs, marijuana, Kenny Rogers, or ecstasy. No pillaging, no rape, perhaps you've come by some mistake. To me this seems more error than knight-errantry." They're handsome, and some of them, they think you're awful handsome too. Sitting up in heaven, you'll still think about them often, when you're an angel, thinking's all that you can do. At this, Sir Galahad got angry. "Angel," he said, "don't you tempt me. I wish to go to heaven and not to hell. When stable boys look lonesome, when the women call me handsome, I'll hold my virtue very firmly by myself. I guarantee you'll hold it often," said the angel. "Oh, one more thing before you drink the cup, please take your armor off. I gotta carry you to heaven, and despite what you'd imagine, I have trouble bearing heavy things aloft." Galahad stood naked in a pile of his armor, his boots and helmet scattered all around. His perfect lips, they sipped the grail, his perfect heart commenced to fail, his perfect body fell upon the ground. The angel smoked a cigarette, when he was sure Galahad was dead, he picked all of his clothes up off the floor. I put on his boots and arm, I laid his body on the altar, put his helmet on, and I headed for the door.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Smile today, I'm not gonna lie. You're outliving it up today. I've got dues to pay, and the grave digger puts on the forceps. The stonemason does all the work. The barber can give you a haircut. The carpenter can take you out to lunch. Now, but I just want to play on my panpipes. I just want to drink me some wine. As soon as you're born, you start dying. So you might as well have a good time. Oh no, sheep go to heaven, goats go to hell. Sheep go to heaven, goats to hell. Oh no. Sunset Strip. I don't wanna feel the emptiness. Bold marquees with stupid band names. I don't wanna go to Sunset Strip. I don't wanna go to Sunset Strip. I don't wanna feel the emptiness. Bold marquees with stupid band names. I don't wanna go to Sunset Strip.
Now, go find the others.com.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.